This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Bob Holsworth, one of Virginia's very best premier political scientists and the president of VirginiaTomorrow.com, joins me on Monday afternoons to talk a little Virginia politics and this time of year update us about what in the heck is going on at the Virginia General Assembly. Bob, how are you? Happy Monday.
Hey, I'm doing great, Coy. How are you doing today?
Very good. We have something special to talk about today, and let's start with that. This past weekend was the occasion of the Democrats' annual Jefferson Jackson dinner. That was Saturday evening in Richmond, and I can tell by your blog that you were there, and you were even backstage behind the scenes.
Oh, it was a very interesting time, because a lot of people are looking particularly at these three gubernatorial candidates. President Clinton was there, and he certainly drew a big crowd of admirers, but I think most people really wanted to know which of these candidates are they most likely to support come this primary. They all gave their talks, and it was a very, very interesting night. Terry McAuliffe said he wasn't going to criticize another Democrat during the race, but Brian Moran and Cree Deeds drew some pretty bright lines and basically suggested that they've been fighting in the trenches in Virginia for 20 years, and wouldn't the Democrats, they essentially said, want to take somebody who shared that history of fighting in good times and in bad, rather than someone who is coming into Virginia from the outside? McAuliffe made a good presentation himself, talked about the jobs he could bring to Virginia and the kind of economic dynamism he wants to reinvigorate here in the state. And it looks like it's really going to be a fascinating race.
We're talking with Bob Holsworth of VirginiaTomorrow.com, a must-read website if you want to know what's going on in Virginia politics. So, Bob, really with Brian Moran, and who was on this program last week, and I want to talk about that as well, but Brian Moran and Cree Deeds, it looks like their strategy is to paint McAuliffe as a come here, as a carpetbagger, and he's not one of us.
Yeah, certainly that's what's happening here. McAuliffe is someone who talks about bringing ideas to Virginia. He talks about what he can bring to Virginia. Deeds and Moran, on the other hand, talk about the fact that they are Virginians, that they were in the General Assembly when the Democrats had only 34 members at the beginning of this decade, that they helped to revitalize the party along with Tim Kaine and Mark Warner, and shouldn't that sense of shared history be rewarded, rather than the fact that McAuliffe is a national figure with a lot of resources and big ideas. Moran's speech was very, very pointed. He said that he was a fighter, not a fundraiser. He took a number of jabs at McAuliffe, said this is a race between the grassroots and the top down. And Cree Deeds gave a Henry Howell-type speech. He spoke about, it was sort of this revival of democratic populism, that he was in part, he said, of the CEO culture, alluding to, in fact, the notion that maybe McAuliffe is. So very, very pointed commentaries. And what was really fascinating to me at the end of the day is this kind of revival of this populist sentiment on the Democratic side, all directed at McAuliffe.
Interesting. So based on what you were hearing from the folks who were there at the Democrats' JJ dinner Saturday night in Richmond, was any of the three getting traction with their strategy?
I think it's an open race, actually. There were a lot of Democrats who spoke to me and said, McAuliffe has he's a ton of money. They mentioned the fact that he, is an energetic guy, he's a passionate campaigner, has good campaign skills. And there are a number of folks who think, well, maybe at the end of the day, money will win out. But I also spoke to a number of activists who had worked with Cree Deeds or Brian Moran for years. And, and they're not going away at all. Perhaps the most interesting conversation I had that kind of set the stage here was I had a young Latino activist who's a former student of mine, and he's working for Terry McAuliffe. I said, hey, well, how is McAuliffe going to do? Or he's working on behalf of McAuliffe. He's not a paid employee. And he said, I hope he does well. He says, he has some good ties to the Latino community. He's working very hard. He said, but, Brian Moran has a lot of the leadership behind him already. The traditional Virginia Latino leadership's lined up there. And so that's what we're seeing here, that McAuliffe has to find a way to wrest some of these traditional leaders and traditional groups away from the people that they were getting ready to line up behind. And that's his task and his challenge. And then I think his second challenge is to speak in ways that emphasize that we Virginians, rather than what he will bring to the state.
Right, yeah, yeah. Instead of saying what I'm going to bring to you Virginians.
Right. And so, but, you know, he's a skillful guy. Everything that McAuliffe's campaign does brings that kind of national savvy to the event. You know, they were there at the pre-event. They bought 40 tables at the event. Their people were working the media center during the event. And afterwards, he was at a crowded Richmond nightclub, you know, dancing to hip-hop.
Yeah.
So, you know, he leaves no stone unturned. But at the same time, Brian Moran gave a very aggressive speech. He's really clearly found a voice. And that voice that both he and Cree Deeds are using is that they're going to use the kind of Jim Webb rhetoric, the Henry Howell rhetoric, the fact that they're fighters taking on the big guy.
We're talking with Bob Holsworth, Virginia's premier political scientist, one of the very best in this state covering Virginia politics. He is president of VirginiaTomorrow.com. You can learn more there, a fantastic website. Gosh, I got a million questions, but let me just start. Brian Moran was in here a few days ago and spoke at length about his green policies, his green energy plan, and how it just makes good business sense, and it's about national security, and how, you know, Virginia should be setting a national model and taking the lead on this kind of stuff. Is that getting traction, you think?
I think it's probably a very good strategy for Moran. Now, all of the candidates Saturday night talked about this. Everybody wants to be green. But I think Moran is trying to define himself as the greenest of them all, particularly with his opposition to the coal-fired plant in Surrey, which neither Deeds nor McAuliffe opposes, and his adamant opposition to offshore drilling. And this is a change in Virginia politics, I think, Coy. I don't recall any time where I've ever seen a candidate believe that taking these strong stances on the environment will actually gain them significant numbers of votes. And I think that's very clear that Moran has spent so much time doing this. He believes, I think, environmental voters in areas particularly like Charlottesville, Albemarle, the Williamsburg area and Hampton Roads, that these issues resonate very, very strongly and that he's going to get a good turnout of these constituency groups in the Democratic primary. And my sense is that the environment is part of a broader strategy of Moran to define himself as the progressive in the race against Terry McAuliffe, who represents the party establishment at the national level, and he's going to try to define Cree Deeds as kind of an establishment guy as well. But that's what he's trying to do. Moran is trying to pick off the progressive constituency groups in the Democratic Party, you know, and if he's successful, that's not a bad strategy for the primary. Now, whether that'll be helpful in November or not, I don't
know. Right, right. Yeah, well, I was just thinking, if he does get the nomination, it'll be interesting to see how that strategy is tempered as he runs to the middle for the general election.
Right. My sense is that if McAuliffe was not in the race, the strategy would be tweaked a little bit right now. But I think Moran believes, which is the first rule of politics, you have to win the race you're in.
Yeah, yeah. And that is
you get to the next step.
And when is that, June?
That's in June.
The statewide primary to pick the Democratic nominee for governor.
Yeah, and I spoke to Brian.
That's just 4 months, Bob.
I spoke to Brian before he talked on Saturday evening. You know, he was very frank. He said, I'm not going to raise as much money as this guy. I'm going to get outspent by a large margin. I have to find themes, and I have to find a direction, and I have to present a very clear choice to people so that I can counter the effect of the resource disadvantage that I'm at. And I don't know whether it'll work or not, but it seems to me to be a reasonable strategy for Moran to be doing exactly what he's doing.
Yeah. We're talking with Bob Holsworth of VirginiaTomorrow.com. Let us now then jump the aisle and look at the Republican nominee, Bob McDonnell, who's enjoying all of this. You know, the Republicans are just loving the fact that there's three Democrats battling it out for that, just for that nomination. There was a Rasmussen poll, for what it's worth. Now, it's still really early, of course, and we don't even have a Democratic nominee, but still interesting. The polls are always interesting, and of course, they always show us where voters were, not where we're going, but still interesting nonetheless.
And very good news for McDonnell. On one hand, the poll had McDonnell in head-to-head matchups at the moment beating any of the Democratic candidates. I didn't take that too seriously, other than the sense that it is good news for McDonnell and it'll help his fundraising. What was really fascinating and even better news for McDonnell, however, tended to be the favorable, unfavorable ratings that were a step below the head-to-head matchup in the poll. McDonnell's favorable to unfavorables right now is 50% favorable, 18% unfavorable, 32% of the people don't know him. It's almost 3-1 favorable to unfavorable. None of the Democrats in the matchup had a favorable to unfavorable rating that was more than 1-1.
Wow.
So, you know, and here's their challenge. They're going to be spending time beating up on each other, you might say, in some way, you know, for the next 5 months, while at the same time, McDonald's just, you know, in some ways banking his cash and doesn't have an opponent to really hit him consistently. So Democrats are going to have to figure out a way that they can both, you know, try to garner the nomination for themselves, each Democrat, and at the same time not let McDonnell get so far out ahead that you can't reel him back.
Right, right. It's going to be really fascinating.
Yeah, those were very good poll numbers for McDonnell. We'll have to get some other polls to see whether or not you know, these results stand up.
Yeah, of course.
But the fact of the matter is that it garnered a lot of attention last week in political circles.
Well, for political junkies like us, this, of course, is one of the funnest years. And it's going to be so interesting. Coming on the heels of that major historic election last year, just a few months ago, it'll be interesting to see now how people run in Virginia, how the Republicans run, how the Democrats run. It'll be interesting to see what it looks like at the local level with all the local races going on this year as well.
Right, and particularly, you know, the General Assembly races that are going on. We were going to have a battle for control over the General Assembly. You know, and we saw that last week, the high drama that eventually resulted over Speaker Bill Howell's decision to go seek a you know, a compromise smoking ban.
Well, that's where I was going to go next. Give us the whole backstory on this smoking ban, because I think that might have surprised a lot of people to see Bill Howell, you know, doing this. I mean,
exactly.
You
know, in the initial discussion about the smoking ban, any number of Republicans in the House stood up and said this is a bad idea. It infringes upon decisions and outcomes that could emerge from free markets, and the government should not be heavily involved in this. All of a sudden, Bill Howell initiates a conversation with Governor Kaine, and they work on and develop a compromise smoking ban. Howell comes back and announces it to the Republicans in the House caucus. He announces that they have the smoking ban, and a member of the caucus stands up and very, very upset, says, why a full caucus vote on what is going on here? And Howell responds by saying, I'm not going to permit that vote, but if you want to vote on my leadership, be my guest.
Wow.
and at that time, they declined. But it was very, very interesting that Bill Howell has staked an awful lot on his belief that this is going to work very well for what you might call suburban Republican legislators and legislators on the Republican side who, you know, live in university-based areas, people, you know, places where people have no sympathy for smokers, no sympathy for smoking. And what Howell is trying to do is to take this issue off the table. And we're going to have to see how much Republican support this even gets, you know, when it comes up for an official vote. But what a remarkable piece of drama that occurred in the Assembly.
Hey, we're talking with Bob Holsworth of VirginiaTomorrow.com. Bob, do you think that compromise would have survived a Republican caucus vote?
No. I really don't.
And Howell, you know, wouldn't let him do it. Yeah.
I think that this was a case where, you know, Howell really felt it's in his interest to protect, you know, 5 or 6 seats. And he's been doing an awful lot. He's been working really hard to try to ensure the Republicans maintain their majority. He developed a special sort of fundraising category that he himself controls that will be used to help protect the seats of endangered Republicans. You know, he's gone outside the central party structure to do so. He's made a lot of committee assignments with this in mind. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, he really felt that the most vulnerable Republicans would be better off with this issue off the table.
Wow. That's really fascinating. And I wonder if there'll be much pushback or has he raised the ire of, you know, free enterprise groups or folks who, you know, business owners, restaurant owners?
Yeah, well, it depends where they are. You know, there are some business owners that, you know, are in environments right now that it really doesn't matter, that most of their patrons don't want to have any access to smoking.
Yeah, yeah.
On the other hand, there are certain businesses that, you know, typically have seen this as almost part of the culture. I mentioned in one piece, and, you know, in my much younger days, I hung out a lot in blues bars and, you know, listening to music there. And it was, you know, and it seemed that smoking was part of the culture. I never did it. But at the same time, I think people who go to certain types of restaurants, you know, expect to be have that right.
Yeah, yeah.
But if it's taken away from everybody, you know, I think they'll survive. But the fact of the matter is they're not so happy with it. And I can also tell you, Coy, there are a number of Democrats, particularly in rural areas, who themselves are vulnerable, who are not very, very happy with having to come and vote either with the governor or with their constituents on this.
Yeah, yeah. I was in, I and my family were in a Cracker Barrel last night for dinner, and we were sitting near the quote-unquote smoking section, which was the equivalent of a few chairs behind a half wall.
Yeah.
I mean, that was it. It was just a little half wall. And I was talking with the waitress about it, about the new compromise in Virginia and what's going to happen, and she said, there's never anybody sitting in there anyway. She said, we don't even need it. No one ever asks to sit in there anyway anymore.
There's been a dramatic cultural change on this. You know, I can remember, you know, 30 years ago where people smoked in classrooms, where wherever you went, people, you know, people lit up. And that is not the general culture in the society any longer.
Yeah, yeah.
And so my sense is that Howell felt that, you know, things are moving against them, and why get involved in this rearguard action that eventually is going to go the other way anyway?
Right, right. Well, I'm old enough to remember when I was in junior high, you could still smoke at school. They had they called it the smoking court, and it's where all the students and the teachers would go out and smoke together in between classes.
When I first started teaching at the university, Coy, and this is why I'm aging myself here, people smoked in the classrooms.
Oh, you're kidding. No, while they were teaching.
And the students.
And the students. Bob Holdsworth, formerly of a smoking VCU and now president of VirginiaTomorrow.com. Bob, before we let you go, I wanted to ask you about Bob Marshall's legislation, of course, which touches my life in particular with an autistic son. But he wrote about his bill on Virginia Tomorrow, and you also covered it on Sunday. Update us about what this is.
Oh, well, this is a pretty dramatic aspect of what's going on as well. As you know that Bob Marshall and David Poisson on the Democratic side from up in Prince William put forward a bill that would mandate insurance coverage for children who have autism. And it was opposed by a number of business interests in Virginia, not because they are against autistic kids in any way, but because they feared that the expense of this particular bill might drive some businesses not to offer insurance at all. And so what happened is that when the bill came before House Labor and Commerce, it didn't even come up for a vote. It was Marshall's bill, but since he's not on the committee, it was just passed by without even a vote. And Marshall was outraged. He said that silence was not an acceptable option. He wrote on my blog that he had spoken to a parent who had said that they could have taken a no vote, but that this mother said to have no vote at all was really an insult.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Marshall said he was going to try this week to do a discharge petition to get it to the floor of the entire House.
And that was this morning, right?
Yeah, and do an end run around the committee. And, you know, that, and he also says that he was threatened then with expulsion from the GOP caucus.
Wow.
But I think this is really an example of how Bob Marshall is a unique individual down in the General Assembly. There are a lot of people who don't like him. You know, a lot of people on the left don't like his position on abortion. There are a lot of people on the right who don't like the fact that he doesn't compromise on certain of his beliefs. But he's a person who's willing to take what he thinks and take it to the ultimate end. You know, he was a person who believed that the transportation compromise was unconstitutional.
He was right,
and
as it turned out.
He managed to get a unanimous decision out of the Virginia Supreme Court on that.
Yeah.
Something that was, you know, put together again by the political establishment of both parties. So he's a unique individual. He's a very smart guy. He irritates a lot of people, but at the end of the day, I think legislatures benefit from having these kind of quirky, eccentric characters who will do and say things that not everybody else will do and say.
Yeah, I certainly haven't agreed with Bob Marshall on a lot of things, but on this personally I do. I agree with what he's trying to do. I think it would be a good thing for families like mine. Bob Holsworth, formerly of VCU, now president of VirginiaTomorrow.com. You can check it out there. The best website for tracking Virginia politics online, VirginiaTomorrow.com. Bob joins us on Monday afternoons. Bob, thank you so much.
Always great to be here. Coy,
absolutely.
See you next week.
Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.